At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors. Today is Friday, March 15th, 2024, and I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of InvestTalk. Now, before we get to our regularly scheduled programming, this is the last opportunity I will have to talk to you all about something that we at InvestTalk and KPP Financial are very excited about. And that is the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Instead of basketball brackets, we are pitting companies head-to-head in an epic showdown of market prowess. Participants will navigate through the market's ups and downs, all competing for the grand prize of $1,000. So if you're tempted to join the fun, as you should be, as I wish I could, know that it is free to play. Head over to investtalk.com, download your brackets, fill them out, and compete using the provided link. But hurry, you only have until this Sunday, March 17th, to submit your predictions. Be sure to download every podcast for more updates and details, and be sure to tell your friends about the InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Now, that being said, I think we have a great and informative program planned for you over the next almost 45 minutes. But before we preview our show topics for today and wrap up the market for this week, let's kick it off by answering our first caller question that came in earlier.
Hi there. I have a question on Apple, AAPL. This is Dan from Walnut Creek. And last week, I asked Justin what he thought about it, and I think he said that he thought it might be a good buy around 165. I was wondering, in light of the $2 billion lawsuit Apple is facing in Europe, that changes a good buy point for Apple. Thanks very much for your help. I appreciate it. Bye now.
Dan from Walnut Creek, thank you for calling in again. And the question is about Apple. I don't think I have to explain to anybody what Apple does. It's one of the largest companies on planet Earth. But for those of you who don't know regarding the lawsuit that Dan was talking about, the European Union issued I believe $2 billion antitrust fine against Apple. So $2 billion is a fine issued. The lawsuit hasn't been completed. We don't know what they're really going to pay. And the reason why they issued this fine is because they were, quote, unfairly favoring its own music streaming services. Essentially, they were telling rivals like Spotify, you aren't allowed to tell Apple users, iPhone users, that you have a cheaper product. So from an antitrust perspective, that's what we in the business call a big no-no. And so, am I worried about this lawsuit for the long-term value of Apple? Not really. Even if they paid the full $2 billion, they're sitting on $61 billion in cash. A company like Amazon, whose entire business practice may be open to regulatory scrutiny from an antitrust perspective because of how they treat sellers, that may be worrisome. But we're just talking about Apple's practice with regards to Apple Music. It's not even a big earner for the company. Justin said last week, 165 is a good price. 165 to 170 still seems like a pretty good price to me. This doesn't really change my mind, and I doubt it would change his. Thanks for the call. And we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. And here's a little bit of what I have planned time permitting. My main focus point concerns this question. Is EV, electric vehicle euphoria, dead? Automakers, including Ford, General Motors, Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, both domestic and international automakers, are scaling back or even delaying their electric vehicle plans. We'll talk a little bit about the EV market trends, the automotive industry shift to EV, and the transition to electric vehicles broadly. We'll also be talking a little bit about some news that came down the pike today in regards to housing. Big changes that are potentially underway for not just home buyers and home sellers, but realtors. The NAR, National Association of Realtors, reached a historic settlement today in a lawsuit that will likely have some widespread effects for all those involved in the housing market. Another big topic for us today, especially in the wake of next week's meeting, is going to be about interest rates. The market is finally, I would say, capitulating to the Fed and starting to fall in line with Fed's rate expectations. Recall that earlier in the year and at the end of last year, traders were anticipating 7 cuts, something that we said would never happen, but the market thought 7 cuts. They priced in 7 cuts in 2024. Well, now the market's pricing in 3. So what effect does that have? And what does that mean for us as investors? And lastly, if we have time, we'll touch on an important warning for all of you out there, as there is a new scam with some familiar names. So hopefully we get to that at the end of the show. But we're going to head into a short break right now. On the other side, I will run down the market today, as well as answer some more of your questions that come in. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley, call now.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. For investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Let's go to Jose in New York, who has a question for us. Your question is about CELH, Celsius Holdings. Do you own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking to buy it. I just wanted to know, do you think it's a price that had a good price to buy? Because I was looking at the earnings, and it looked like it was pretty good. What I see, like on the web, it looks like. I'm just wanting to know, do you think it's a little bit overbought at that price? Because it looks pretty expensive. But
So for those listening out there, Celsius Holdings engages in the development and marketing of energy drinks, energy products. Celsius, I know my girlfriend loves Celsius drinks. She doesn't drink them as much anymore. There's a little too much sugar in them for me. But taking a look, it looks like in the past month they have had quite the run-up. Its price to book value right now is a staggering 82. That is incredibly high. Its forward-looking price to earnings is 78.4. So my guess is they haven't even reported earnings in a while. So there's been quite the run-up over the past month, probably on the back of Q1 earnings. And right now, the short interest out there is sitting at a staggering 24.32%. To me, based on price to book, based on price to cash flow, price to earnings, price to sales at 16, any relative multiple you're looking at, sure, they've been improving on the profitability side. They turned a profit for the first time, it looks like, which is fantastic. It's what companies need to strive to do. Their cash flow is improving. But this price is incredibly steep from a relative perspective. So I would wait for it to come back down. I wouldn't buy any company at a price to book of 82 or a forward-looking price to earnings of 76. Thanks for the call.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the market today and this week as well. U.S. equities, a little bit lower, large caps lower in Friday trading, ending off, worse levels, but really closing out the second losing week in a row. Big tech mostly lower, software, semis, roads, hotels, casinos, all the big companies were lower. Notably, really a harbinger for how the economy is doing, small caps outpaced the S&P 500 by over 100 basis points, the Russell 2000 closing up 40 basis points. The big outperformers really being dragged by industrials and materials names, as well as some energy names. Treasuries, with the elevated inflation expectations, mostly weaker, extending the week's run up on yields. Gold finishing down, but still capping off its first, or rather it's finishing down 20 basis points, capping off its first weekly decline in 4 weeks. Crude oil slightly down, though still up 4%. It was a big, big week for commodities. And really, from a narrative perspective, it was a quiet day to end the week. There wasn't much news going on. Most of the activity, in my opinion, is just really a continuation from the hotter inflation prints, rising inflation expectations, and really deteriorating economic data that we saw earlier in the week. Now, as far as the bears and the bulls are concerned this week, on the bearish side, you had core CPI coming in a bit hotter for a second straight month. Headline and core CPI, both surprising to the upside, as well as a jump in long-term inflation expectations from the New York Fed Commissioner survey. On the bullish side of things, while core CPI did come in hotter, the street still expects general deflation to resume going forward. Some early Fed preview commentary, something we will be looking to next week, flagged, frankly, an unchanged dot plot for the rest of the year. The big growth driver, generative AI, still seems to have some legs. Oracle reported some huge numbers on the back of some staggering large cloud infrastructure deals. And still, there's a lot of cash on the sidelines. Now, some are saying maybe it's not all meant to be equity inflows, and I tend to agree with them. But still, there is a lot of dry powder sitting out there, as well as no real signs of widespread credit stress. Now, looking ahead to next week, pretty busy week. You got housing starts on Tuesday. You got initial claims on Thursday, and of course, FOMC meeting on Wednesday. Expected is no rate cut, as we've expected for some time. The market finally agrees with us. But the more interesting part will definitely be what happens with their forward guidance. They say they're data dependent. Will recent data cause them to change their expectations of rate cuts going forward? I guess we will find out next Wednesday. That was the market today and this week. Now let's turn our focus to my main focus point, which concerns the question, is EV euphoria dead? And so over the past decade, the buzz, pun very much intended, around electric vehicles has been pretty loud. Some people, 5, 6, 7 years ago, thought that the age of the gas guzzler that had propelled much of American life was coming to an end. They saw this EV market trend as irreversible. The automotive industry had this indescribable EV shift. And so in tune with that, automakers from the big four in Detroit and international brands as well had these wholesale shifts to try and capture this fast-growing market. A lot of this was propelled by the seeming success of Tesla. And Wall Street hopped on, as they tend to do, heralding the new age and praised those that sought to take advantage of it. But as you all know, that's not really how the story ends. And so today, this transition to electric vehicles, it's kind of at a pause. Things are changing. Recent developments suggest the auto industry is taking a step back from its EV-only future, something we see as pretty wise, to embrace a more diversified approach. Companies across the board are scaling back or delaying their electric vehicle plans. Even Tesla, a company that's been synonymous with electric vehicle revolution, said earlier this year that the growth rate is going to slow. And so this pivot isn't just about offering a mix of gas-powered, hybrid, and electric vehicles. It's really a recalibration and thinking about what consumers want, as well as having a realistic adoption timeline. The initial euphoria, which saw incredibly ambitious timelines and growth forecasts, is fading, but that doesn't mean the industry is completely leaving it behind. Rather, the big players who threw all their weight behind these lofty goals see a more measured approach is ideal. Ford, for instance, ramping up its production on hybrid models. GM, Once an enthusiastic advocate of an all-EV lineup, reintroducing plug-in hybrids, something we've professed as the better and more realistic alternative for quite some time. So while the future may still be electric, the tech industry today, or rather the tech to create cars, doesn't really allow us to get there. That's not to say the EV market isn't growing. US EV sales hit a record 1.2 million units last year, and it will continue to grow. But the macro picture as well will determine how quickly this transition can move with constrained supply chains and increasing costs. So what's the lesson to take away from all of this? What's the lesson from the EV market that we can apply to, I don't know, AI, anything else that's new? Well, the future is never quite what you expect it to be. So when you hear these wild projections and prognostications, no matter the industry, take it with a grain of salt. Take a step back and think about it. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I am here to answer your questions. I can't wait to hear from you. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let me alert you all to a new InvestTalk Classroom episode we have just published. A little over 2 months have passed since the SEC approved the launch of several Bitcoin ETFs. In the latest episode of the InvestTalk Classroom, we delve into the Bitcoin ETF story and its potential effects for the economy. Join me and Justin Klein as we provide a detailed analysis of what the future might hold in episode 17, Bitcoin ETF Impact. Search InvestTalk Classroom on YouTube and be sure to tell all of your friends and family. And now let's pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hello. Good day, Justin and Luke. Longtime listener and caller here from Minnesota. I've been looking for an energy fund. Energy seems to be a good area from what I've heard and learned this year to possibly get into for the future. I'm looking at a fund, RSPG. I was wondering what you guys thought, how it's weighted and so forth. I believe it's supposed to be an evenly weighted fund among many different sectors of energy. How do you feel about it? Would this be something that you'd recommend for a long-term buy and hold? Thank you for your comments and information. I wish Steve the best also. Have a good day.
So RSPG, and first let me say thank you from Steve for the well wishes, but RSPG is a large cap sector fund, which is an equal weighted index that tracks energy names within the S&P 500. So the S&P 500 standard index, a lot of indices are market cap weighted, meaning larger the company, larger weight in the index. The equal weight approach effectively overweights small caps and mid caps and underweights large caps, right? In this case, it would overweight the smallest large caps and underweight the largest large caps on a market cap relative basis. So what this tries to do is essentially give you factor-loaded exposure on the small cap premium, right? Historically, empirically, we know that over time, small caps and smaller companies tend to outperform larger companies because of really just the risk. So what this aims to do is overweight those smaller companies and beat a market-weighted approach. So let's take a look at it. First off, it is 40 basis points is its expense ratio, which is incredibly expensive for a fund that is investing in large cap names and likely doesn't rebalance all that often. If it's rebalancing when the S&P rebalances, it's rebalancing once a quarter. So you're paying a lot for not a lot of management because all they're doing is taking 25 names and weighting them equally. There's only 25 holdings in here. And so what you're going to get is style drift, number one. So it's not going to be equal weight except for the day that it's reconstituted. But there's only 25 names in this fund. You could do this yourself. Although I do love your idea of buying energy names. There are better ETFs to do it. But this is a good lesson in always digging in to think about, what am I paying this ETF to do? You're paying this ETF specifically 40 basis points a year to equally weight 25 names once a quarter. So no, I would not recommend this fund. There are better funds out there. Thanks for the call. Now on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. The two-year yield was at 4.732%. For perspective, last week it was at 4.48. 4 weeks ago it was at 4.46. 18 weeks back it was at 5.05. And 103 weeks ago it was at 1.961. The 10-year yield was at 4.308. Last week it was at 4.077. 5 weeks ago it was at 4.17. 18 weeks back it was 4.63. And 113 weeks ago it was 1.762. Gold closed at $21.56 per ounce after a recent run-up. Last week, it was $21.77, so slightly down. 7 weeks ago, it was at $2,018. And 88 weeks ago, it was at $18.09. Silver today was at $25.18 per ounce. Last week, it was at $24.32. 7 weeks ago, it was at $22.80. And 84 weeks ago, it was at $18.64. Oil was selling for $81.04 per barrel. Last week at $77.83, 7 weeks back it was $78.04, 22 weeks ago it was $87.44, and 114 weeks ago it was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is 3.43 per gallon. Last week it was 3.40, 41 weeks ago it was 3.56, and 109 weeks ago it was 3.57. In California, it was averaging $4.88 per gallon. Last week, that number was 4.87, not much change there. 7 weeks ago, it was 4.48. 20 weeks ago, 5.32. And 96 weeks ago, it was 5.87. I'm happy we don't live in that reality anymore. For comparison, in Utah, today gas was averaging $3.34. 154 pennies less per gallon than it is in California. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we look into this question. Can you protect your portfolio against bond price drops? Owning bank loan strategies requires perspective, and index funds are not a default option as in many other asset classes. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls. 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Steve. My name is Jacob from Arizona. I'm a pretty young investor, and I just had a few questions for you guys. I do have a lot of money kind of sitting in the bank, which I do not like, as I know that money sitting in the bank doesn't really do anything for you, especially when you're young. So I guess I have some questions here regarding the markets. Do you guys suggest, I guess, playing it safer and allocating more of my portfolio towards ETFs and things, or should I kind of play it more risky? What are the best options that you guys would give a young investor here? I appreciate all the information you guys give out, and I look forward to the answer in the podcast. Thank you. Have a great day.
So first and foremost, you are young. You have a long time to invest, which means you have the ability to take on a lot of risk if you're saving for retirement, because you don't need that money down the road. But given you're new to investing, I absolutely think you should start off with ETFs. I'm personally of the opinion that in times of heightened volatility, higher interest rates, non-free money, active management can provide excess returns. But I don't think you have the expertise to do that at this stage. A lot of people never get that expertise. And so ETFs are a great way to get exposure to equity returns, something you should be heavily invested in at your age. And it is a great place to start to learn about the dynamics of liquidity, the dynamics of supply and demand, how markets work. Educate yourself, and then maybe you can take on some of the more difficult, challenging aspects of the market. Thanks for the call. Now let's pivot over to some big news. Came out of the National Association of Realtors, or the NAR, arguably one of the most important bodies in the industry. And they reached a $418 million settlement in response to claims that they were conspiring to keep agent commissions artificially high. And because of this, there are likely going to be some changes coming down the pike that will not only affect realtors, but you as a home buyer or a home seller. So what's the settlement about? Well, it's about a desire by homeowners and prospective homeowners to have greater transparency and flexibility in how agent fees are handled. Historically, really for decades now, the industry operated by a standard, and that was commission rates given to buyers and sellers' agents would be taken out of the price of a home, and they would sell that commission, or rather they would share that commission. And so this practice often ended in cost being inflated. Why? If you're the agent for a buyer, you're incentivized to pay more. If you're getting 5%, you want to be 5% on a more expensive house. And so justifiably, people didn't like that. And so although things may change, this change doesn't come down till mid-July. And that's only if the settlement receives federal court approval. And as a result, should it go through, home sale listings will no longer need to include an upfront offer of compensation to buyers' agents, which will hopefully empower buyers to negotiate their agents' fees directly with their agent, or maybe even bypass all agents together. And this recent settlement came on the heels of, get this, a $1.8 billion penalty against the NAR last October. It's been a really rough year. So if anything, these new rules seem to me to be really a way for the NAR to avoid future lawsuits. And, you know, it's not only going to affect consumers, because these high fees are how realtors get paid. One analyst predicted that of the $100 billion paid annually by Americans in commissions, it could shrink by 30%. So logically, one would assume that the number of overall realtors would dramatically fall. But, you know, as with everything, it's a complex situation. As a whole, it might not all be good news, because there are certainly trade-offs. On one hand, the ability to negotiate fees could lower the overall cost of buying a home. If the person who's negotiating the home price isn't incentivized to make it more expensive for you, that should lower prices. But, and there's almost always a but, the new model might challenge first-time buyers or those struggling to save for a down payment. Because rather than amortizing the cost of those agent fees over the life of the loan through a mortgage, that cost is up front now. And so sellers can still compensate buyers' agents if they want to. But if they're less inclined to do this, buyers might not use agents. People who are less able to afford agents may be less able to close on houses. Generally, I think it's probably good for the industry, because the industry has clearly suffered from unreasonably high middleman fees. But it's important to keep in mind, nothing is set in stone. So if you're considering buying a new home in the near future, best to keep an eye on ongoing developments that could certainly affect not just the cost, but the overall journey of you closing on that house. Now, the KPP Premium newsletter was finished today, and it will be distributed to subscribers tomorrow. But I have a preview just for you all. In the market conditions section, we explained that stocks finish lower today as the market continues to assess the latest producer and consumer price data, which could affect the Federal Reserve's future path on interest rates. U.S. equities have pulled back after the latest inflation data came in hotter than expected, with the S&P 500 having hit a record closing high of 5175.27 on Tuesday, but ending at 5150.48 on Thursday. The S&P 500 has notched 17 new highs already this year, the highest since 1998. The run so far has been driven by economic resiliency, enthusiasm for artificial intelligence, and a hope that the Federal Reserve will cut rates. The unexpected rise in February's producer price index has intensified worries about persistent inflation, a topic that we've highlighted for quite some time now, while putting additional pressures on the Fed to adjust its monetary path and policy accordingly. New economic data shows somewhat strengthening deterioration, a situation that typically would induce the Fed to cut while reheating inflation continues to give them pause. Next week's Fed meeting should highlight if the data-dependent Fed is about to move with the data. We also talked about February retail sales data, which offered a mixed view of the U.S. economy with a modest increase in sales not meeting analyst expectations. This suggested cautious consumer sentiment may not just be in the lower income levels, but across the spectrum broadly, likely influenced by diminishing pandemic-era savings and ongoing inflationary pressures. Amidst this backdrop, investors are grappling with the dual threats of an overheating economy and entrenched inflation. Given the macroeconomic risks, it would be wise to use the recent rise in equity prices to take some profits and rebalance your portfolio. Because the best guard against downside is, and has always been, diversification. There's a lot more commentary detailed in the newsletter, as well as stock ideas. In the stock ideas section, we highlighted one of the largest auto dealership groups in the United States. The company has 108 franchise stores in 18 states, primarily in metropolitan areas in California, Texas, and the Southeast, plus 25 used vehicle stores, 16 collision centers, and 13 power sports locations. With a forward PE under 10 and 2.3% dividend yield, we think this stock is worthy of being on a watch list. And we also looked at a retailer of casual apparel, footwear, and accessories. The company retails medium to better priced casual apparel, footwear, and accessories for fashion-conscious young men and women. Although the growth is expected to moderate, we think that there's still value in this stock. It currently trades at 10 forward PDE and pays 3.6% in dividend yield and seems to be finding support in the mid to high 30 range. We name names in the newsletter, and I've given you a sample teaser of the latest one. Subscribers receive the full edition via email each Saturday. They also get the portfolio and consumer watch sections. Learn more and subscribe anytime at investtalk.com. All right, let's swing back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Good day, gentlemen. I'm calling in today looking for your insight as to whether I should increase my stake in Outfront Media, OUT, or purchase Lamar Advertising Company, LAMR. They're both industry leaders in the billboard and digital billboard field. They have a great dividend, and I'm not sure which one I should invest more money into. So I appreciate any help you can give me. Thank you very much.
So Outfront Media, OUT, leases advertising space on out-of-home advertising structures and sites. It consists of billboard displays, digital billboards. It's an advertising company. So generally, if you're of the opinion that there's going to be some economic turmoil, this is the exact opposite of the place you would want to be, because advertising tends to suffer when people stop marketing things. Its forward-looking price earnings is 23.2, which is not egregiously high. Its price-to-book value sits at a 4.4. Its price-to-sales is a 1.5. From a relative valuation perspective, looks fine to me. Its cash flows increased over the last year. Its profitability is pretty flat, however. Its return on assets is negative. Its return on equity is negative. Its pre-tax margin is negative. Looks like it lost money last year. In 2023, it's projected to make some money. In 2024, 68 cents, and then 76 cents in 2025. But there have been some analyst upgrades, and there's been a decent size run-up from $8 to $16 going back the past 5 months. Now, the second company, Lamar, L-A-M-R, is also in the advertising space. Lamar's cash flow increasing for the past 3 years. Its profitability, positive. Its debt levels, modest, $4 billion on $11 billion. Its dividend yield, 4.47, which is in line with where it's been over the past 5 years, a consistent dividend. Frankly, I like Lamar more. It's a more consistent business. It has a consistent dividend. It has improving cash flows. It has increasing earnings expectations. They've been issuing a little bit of shares, but not too much. So overall, if you had to choose between the two, I would go with Lamar. Well, 2024 is humming along, and we are almost through the first quarter. There are only 2 trading weeks remaining. And you may have noticed that we've been telling you for quite a while now that a new market environment has taken hold. So serious investors need to be able to adjust their thinking and strategies to fit the times. Let me remind you that here at InvestTalk and at KPP Financial, we operate with a philosophy of independent thinking, shared success. We offer unbiased guidance, practice parallel investing, where we invest alongside our clients in our investment strategies that we implement and manage ourselves. So I encourage you all to take advantage of our offer to provide a free portfolio review assessment. Speak with myself or Justin via telephone, Skype, or GoToMeeting. If that is interesting to you, as I think it should be, free portfolio review, send us a message through investtalk.com. This is InvestTalk now with more than 58 million downloads, thanks to really you. And our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
Everyone's situation is different.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan.
And so are their questions.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I'm wondering if now...
24-7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, InvestTalk. This is Yannick from Denmark. I would like to ask you about the stock MKL, Markel Co. It's owned by Berkshire Hathaway. It's an insurance company. I was interested in this stock since Berkshire Hathaway bought it. Would like to hear your opinion. Thank you very much. Bye.
MKL is a financial holding company which engages in underwriting specialty insurance products for niche markets, so insurance, reinsurance, and mostly includes direct business and facilitative services. So taking a look at this company, it looks like your profitability is all over the place, which is to be expected with insurance. It's been bumping up and down in terms of return on assets from 0 to 20% over the past 5 years, but its cash flow steadily going up, something we always like to see. It's got minimal debt. Excuse me. $4 billion on a $20 billion market cap company. And because of that, its debt-to-equity ratio is fine. And it looks like it has no problem paying off its interest expenses. And so it looks like in 2021 through 2023, so the end of last year, they were in the 176 to 1... Oh, sorry about that. Looks like last year they made 146.98 per share. And that's coming back down to earth a little bit. It's supposed to be 83.16 this year and 98.72 next year based on analyst projections. You know, for me, generally speaking, if I'm going to get involved within the financial sector, given what's been going on with duration risk, I think insurance is a good way to go about it. But for this company specifically, it seems a little bit too rich to me. I would expect insurance companies to be trading at about their book value. So to be 40% over that is a little too much. Its price to earnings is at 17, again, for an insurance company whose growth has been 4.2% annualized over the past 5 years. I just think it's a little bit too expensive. I would wait for it to come down. It's certainly had a pretty decent run up from 1300 to 1500 over the past couple months. So maybe when it gets back down to the 1450 range, you might want to start thinking about looking into purchasing this name. Thanks for the call, all the way from Europe. It's Friday, and we are moving into our final break. So if you have a question you want to get in before the weekend, I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen Justin. I'm Matt from Illinois. I'm 26 years old and recently started investing in Fidelity Zero Fee Large Cap Index Fund, ticker FNILX. I plan on incrementally investing around 60% of my portfolio into this fund, and I plan on splitting the remaining 40% evenly into a low-fee small-cap index fund and an international index fund. I was wondering if you think this is a solid approach as a long-term, 30-plus-year investment strategy. Thank you, guys, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the show.
So FNILX is the Fidelity Zero Large Cap Index Fund. fund, and it takes the 500 largest companies domiciled in the U.S. and does a market cap weighted approach. And it chooses those companies with a whole bunch of statistical sampling. And the first thing that I see, which is something that I haven't seen before, I'm being frank, is the expense ratio 0% with no 12b1 fee. And so generally what I would expect is this fund is certainly generating revenue. And the way it probably does that is either through some sort of commission arrangement or securities lending. And so when you see anytime something is free, it's generally not free. They are making their money some way. So it's important for you to understand that. You're not getting management for free. Now, with that being said, I think it's a fine approach. I think if you're looking for a 30-year investment horizon, again, historically speaking, small caps outperform mid caps, which outperform large caps. If you can take on that level of risk, you can stomach that volatility. I think you should be allocating more towards the higher return relative to risk securities. Again, it's a monotonic premium, meaning it increases linearly. You take on more risk by investing in small caps and mid caps. Therefore, you are compensated with higher expected returns. So I looked to diversify outside of large caps. I know over the past couple of years, large caps, primarily seven of them, have really been booming. But it shouldn't take you away from the dynamics that are primarily driving equity markets. And that is, investors need to be compensated for risk. Thanks for the call. Now, I had two focus points left, but unfortunately, we only have enough time to get to one. So I'm going to skip the one on interest rates because Justin and I talk about interest rates a lot. And we talk about the market inferring seven cuts when they're wrong. We talked about that a lot over the past couple months. So what I want to talk about before we head off for the weekend is more of a warning to everyone out there who's tuning in. And that is because there is a new scam that some people are falling for. And our goal, first and foremost, is to help educate you to not only become better investors, but to protect yourselves. And that scam involves the use of some familiar names. Recently, it's come to the attention of not just us, but the FTC, that imposters have used the names of famous investors like Bill Ackman from Pershing, Kathy Wood of ARK, Ray Dalio, Bridgewater, as well as others to defraud unsuspecting individuals. Ackman and his firm alone have found nearly 100 ads alleging that the scammer can provide annual returns in excess of 100%. Now, these scams often lead victims to WhatsApp groups for stock tips and have caused individuals to see significant losses resulting from classic pump and dump schemes. Overall, not just this scam, but all of these types of scams, there's been a significant increase in reports of these. Losses tripling from 2019 to 2023 and reaching an estimated $2.7 billion, billion with a B, dollars. And in the past 4 years, scams have only become more and more complex, and they will only become more complex as technology improves. Although regulatory bodies and social media companies have really teamed up to try and remove some of these scams, they're essentially playing whack-a-mole. And it really doesn't seem to be helping much, which means you have to take an active role in your own protection. So once again, I don't like having to say it because it should be obvious, but if a deal seems too good to be true, it is. Nobody else will protect you like you will protect yourself. And as technology continues to improve, so do the people who are preying upon your hard-earned savings. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. Justin and I and Steve, thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please be sure to review and rate us on iTunes. And remember to tell your friends about our Market Madness Contest. It's free to enter and participate, and you might be able to collect the grand prize of $1,000. Learn more at InvestTalk.com and hurry, because Sunday is the deadline to enter. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.